As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Saturday Slammin' Jam, hosted by Andrew Schlecht with Alex Spears.
How about we can just watch basketball?
That's a man's jam!
I like that idea.
Live from Oklahoma.
Quick clip!
With questions and participants from all around the world.
Put that on a poster!
Whether you're flipping your flapjacks, tending to your yard, or just sipping your coffee, get ready, sit back, relax. It's the Saturday Slammin' Jam.
Fact is, I missed this shot. I'll walk away. I'm still a chump.
Here's Andrew.
Welcome to the Saturday Slamma Jam. I'm your host, Andrew Schlecht. Go to theathletic.com/NBA show and get The Athletic for a discounted rate. No Alex Spears with me today, but I do have two awesome guests joining me. First guest is Harrison Wind of DNVR. We'll also have Michael Pina of The Ringer joining us shortly. But right now, I've got Harrison Wind, who covers the Denver Nuggets. Harrison, how's it going, man?
It's going great. Things couldn't actually be going better. I mean, if you're covering the Nuggets right now. Five games in the first round, up 2-0 right now. So we'll see how game three goes. But things are going great.
Yeah, that kind of leads me to my first question. That it feels like the Nuggets have countless advantages through two games against the Suns. Do you at all feel nervous about how good you're feeling about the Nuggets heading into game three?
A little bit, just because that's the nature of covering the Nuggets. Something weird always feels like it's around the corner. But that's the thing, it hasn't with this team. Just because the playoffs have just gone as a lot of us have expected it to. That's weird for us covering the Nuggets. But it's hard not to feel really good about the Nuggets right now.
Yeah.
It's hard not to.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't blame you at all. You could argue that they look like the best team so far through the playoffs, which is not something I don't think many people had predicted, especially nationally. Maybe locally in Denver people did, but nationally that doesn't seem like something that has happened. Even up to like a week ago, I don't think people really had that thought.
Right.
Well, the Suns have single covered Jokic so far. What are your thoughts on that strategy, and do you think they can continue to do that moving forward?
See, I think it's actually the right strategy from them, because my take on the Nuggets offense is that it's at its best when Nikola Jokic is scoring 25 to 35 and also getting everybody involved. And if he's scoring it every time one-on-one against DeAndre Ayton, he can do that and he'll get 40. But my read on, you know, just watching the Nuggets all season is when that happens, Michael Porter, Jamal Murray, KCP, those guys naturally aren't in as good of a rhythm as they would be if he was, you know, passing it more. So I don't think it's a winning strategy from the Suns, but it's the right strategy. I think it's the strategy they should be deploying.
Yeah, you could kind of see it in game two that they just weren't really firing on all cylinders, but at the end of the day, it didn't really matter. This is something that I thought was interesting. You wrote on DNVR about the Nuggets bench, and this caught my eye. The Nuggets have outscored their opponents by 34 points in 82 minutes. It's plus 4.9 per game. that Jokic has been on the bench in the playoffs, which is like a complete 180 from where it was during the regular season. What do you make of this, and do you expect it to continue?
The craziest part is they're doing it with a lineup that played 0 minutes together during the season.
So weird.
Like so the primary bench lineup that now has Aaron Gordon at the five played 0 minutes together all season. And in Denver, we spent a lot of the year talking about the void at backup center. And the solution turned out just to be to play Aaron Gordon more and play him at, mm-hmm. at backup center. It's a weird phenomenon because the Nuggets went from a team with arguably like what felt like the worst bench to now a really good and effective bench, but they're playing like two really good defenders off the bench, Bruce Brown and Christian Brown. Then Jeff Green, a guy who I've never been the biggest Jeff Green supporter, but he's upped his engagement level. I feel sure. like in the playoffs, he's taking charges. He's taken three charges already these playoffs. He took seven all season. So he's he's upping his just level of energy and engagement. And so it's worked. And on that second unit with Aaron Gordon at the five, they can switch everything, which I think has been the biggest reason why they've been good defensively. In this series, Bruce Brown has held his own against DeAndre Ayton. Yeah. So it's working.
Yeah, what have you seen from Christian Brown in his rookie season?
Yeah, I've been the biggest Christian Brown supporter in Denver. I've been like clamoring for him to play more and more ever since the second game of the season. And he, I think, is the best individual defender of the Jokic era. And like that may sound crazy because wow. he's a rookie mm-hmm. and this has been a pretty long era, but it's him or Kentavious Caldwell-Pope or Gary Harris or Paul Millsap, probably. Like, if you're looking mm-hmm. at individual defenders, Christian Brown is special. Like, he does really special things on the defensive end, on the ball and off the ball, just coming out of nowhere for steals and deflection. So, he's been an integral part, absolutely, to the bench looking as good defensively as they have. And, it's crazy that this is the worst he's going to be, like, yeah, forever as a Nugget. Like that's a crazy thought for us.
What's the ceiling thought for Christian?
I mean, I originally thought all season that he could be a Dylan Brooks type without all the antics.
Yeah.
Without all the other stuff, because his offensive game has also been developing all year. Like he's been a really good defender all season, but offensively he went from a guy who really only took like transition layups and or took offensive rebound putback attempts, but now he's kind of exploring his offensive game a little more. So I think he could be like a Dylan Brooks level guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think it's very realistic. A lot of times whenever you talk about rookies, it's easy to go sky high, but like it feels like that's a very realistic, especially this version of Dylan Brooks. I feel like he may have already surpassed him in some ways.
Maybe Dylan Brooks from November, just like that version.
There you go. Joel Embiid was named MVP this week. How did all of the MVP discussion and then ultimately like the announcement ring in Denver?
The day before the announcement, Nikola Jokic was asked what he's going to be doing during it. And he said, mm-hmm. hopefully I'm going to be swimming. And so I feel like that is the collective energy that Denver had during the announcement.
Yeah.
We weren't swimming because it was actually like a super overcast kind of chilly day here. But, mm-hmm. It just kind of came and went, to be honest. Like after the last, straw poll that came out, it was pretty clear Embiid was going to win it. And sure. That was just kind of accepted here in Denver, I think. We kind of moved past it, I think, when Jokic just cashed it in at the end of the year and just was like, nah, I'm just kind of going to shut it down and we're going to rest. And at that point, I feel like most of us were just kind of done with it. Especially how the conversation turned.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. During the time where Denver was kind of just kind of coasting toward the end of the season, a lot of people made something of it. Like locally, did you guys kind of see it for what it was?
The Nuggets coasting? Yeah. I mean, yeah. We tried to tell ourselves that they just had the number one seed locked up and they had their foot off the gas because that's what it seemed like. Yeah. But you never really knew. And then Gabe one of the playoffs hit and they like held the Timberwolves to 80 points. And we were like, oh, okay. All right. Yep, so now we officially know that last month was they were just coasting. That's what they were doing. They were in chill mode.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about Michael Porter Jr. He's not been super involved in this series so far. Some of that is because they're, you know, letting Jokic take 30 shots instead of, you know, spraying the ball around. But he shot the ball well in the playoffs so far, 48% from the field, 38% from three, which is kind of to be expected from a guy of his caliber. What have you seen from MPJ like elsewhere on the court, like defensively and just kind of what else he can contribute? And then do you think the Nuggets are going to try to get him more involved in game three?
Defensively, Michael Porter Jr.'s defense has been like one of the low-key stories in Denver all season. It's been a pretty steady improvement. Because in past playoff series with him, it was always about, oh, the defense putting him in pick and roll and targeting him every play. And
yep.
Like if you think back to that Sun series years ago, you know, it was Chris Paul putting him in the pick and roll, Mikal Bridges blowing right by him. We just haven't thought about Michael Porter Jr. a ton defensively in these playoffs. Yep. And that's a really positive sign. Like, teams haven't really looked to target him like they did 2 years ago, the last time he was in the playoffs. Teams haven't really looked to expose him. And I think that's a testament to just his improved defense, and he can't be targeted and exposed as easily. So it's been a steady climb all year with him on defense. He's bought in, he's committed, he's just become a better defender. And I think you're seeing that. And then in terms of the offense, I expect them to, because, man, when Michael Porter's in a rhythm, the Nuggets are really just that much more unguardable. I mean, you can't contest his shot. He can pull up on seemingly anyone from anywhere on the court. So I definitely think game three, like the Nuggets have to know that, you know, when he's really going, we're that much more unstoppable. So, yeah, I expect it.
Going into the season, were you a little surprised that they didn't do more self-creation stuff for Porter, that he's been mostly an off-ball guy all season? Yeah. Did you see them trying to make him more of a self-creator, or do you see them trying to do that in the future? Because it just seems like they're leaving a little bit on the table with him.
Yeah, and that's kind of the feeling here as well. I can't say I was surprised that they didn't. You know, just because like this team's identity when fully healthy is Nikola Jokic, and then it's Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray in the two-man game. And so I feel like so much of this year was getting Jamal back to this level and beyond. Yeah. Porter was also out for all of last year, but he was always looked at, I feel like, as the easier just plug-and-play guy. You know, you just put him back in. He can stand on the winger in the corner and shoot threes. You don't really have to worry that much about him, if that makes sense. He's always kind of just been on the outside of the Murray-Jokic two-man game and just kind of Denver's identity. In the future, yeah. I mean, I feel like it's a whole chapter with him that hasn't even been unlocked or really touched yet. But you are thinking now if maybe they did commit a little more resources there, now you'd be able to like reap the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm. So Jamal Murray was pretty bothered in game two. Do you expect a bounce back game from him? And was there anything specific that the Suns were implementing that bothered him?
Yeah, I think they were just paying even more attention to him, whether it was like guarding him or shadow guarding him full court, or just being more physical with him. If you go back and look at the shots that he missed, the 9 threes that he missed, 8 of them were wide open. Hmm. Like 7 of them were like without a defender within a couple feet. So I actually believe him when he says after the game that I just miss shots I normally make. But a big thing with Jabal is always how he plays on rest. And like going back to the bubble, the biggest thing is like he was in great shape. He was just playing basketball all the time. And I really think that was a reason he played so well. The rest between games two and game three that the Nuggets have, I think it's 3 days off. Mm-hmm. I think that's really going to help Jamal. I think he's going to have his legs back. And so I'm expecting a bounce back.
What adjustments do you think Phoenix is going to make, or do you think they're capable of making against the Nuggets?
Yeah, I feel like Phoenix is a team where there's not a ton out there that they can go to. The yep. easiest adjustment seems like it's going to be playing more guys off the bench, like a Terrence Ross or a TJ Warren. I bet we see both those guys just try to give the bench a little more offense for them in game two. But their adjustments are kind of limited, I feel like, especially with Chris Paul out.
Yeah,
that means you have to start Cameron Payne. So I feel like Jamal Murray's probably looking forward to tonight because of that.
Yeah.
But I just feel like Phoenix, there's not a lot out there that you can do other than shuffling new guys in.
Mm-hmm. Is there any of those guys that like Denver fans would be like, oh man, I'm kind of afraid of them playing this guy? Or is it just like they're just way too shallow?
TJ Warren, like,
yeah,
maybe a little bit, but mm-hmm. but not really.
Yeah,
I mean this series is gonna come down to like, do they have another game or two where they're that cold from three? Because I just don't think Phoenix can stop the Nuggets. I just don't think they can. So are the Nuggets going to be that cold again? Like, I just have a hard time seeing it. So, yeah, I don't think there's anybody that's that scary.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of thought that game too was that was the stealable game. Like that. Yeah. That's the game that the road team traditionally steals when your lead guard goes 0 of 9 from 3. Like, that's – and – the Suns only scored 87 points, so this is not good. It's not good for Phoenix. With that said, after two games, what's your pick for the series?
Nuggets in five. Yeah.
Okay.
Four would be incredible. I mean, that would be wild. I've got to think Phoenix gets one of these next two, though.
Yeah, you would think. They've got Durant and Booker. They're going to have a game where they both go off. Like, that's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's just all about the role players. Like, they just don't have enough role guys that know how to play with them yet.
Yeah, and if I'm Kevin Durant and I'm seeing all the stories come out about how Aaron Gordon shutting me down in this series, I'd probably feel a certain type of way about that and be like, all right, I'm scoring 50 in game three.
Harrison, thanks so much for answering all of my questions about the Nuggets, but it's now time to play Wind versus Pina, our very first trivia game here on Saturday Slam and Jam, featuring Michael Pina of The Ringer and Harrison Wind of DNVR. I have 8 questions about the Denver Nuggets. You'll get 2 points for each correct answer, and if you miss, your opponent will get a chance to steal for 1 point. Harrison, all I need from you is a number between 1 and 8.
Let's go 3.
Question number 3. Which Nuggets two-man combo has the best net rating in the playoffs so far with a minimum of 100 minutes?
That's going to be... Let's go... Oh, minimum 100 minutes? Okay. Let's go... Nikola Jokic, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
That is incorrect. Michael, chance to steal.
I'm going to go Jokic, Bruce Brown.
Ooh, you got one of them right, but the other one is incorrect. The other one is Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon and Bruce Brown. I kind of tailored this one to you, Harrison,
because
of your bench article.
I know. I got in my head with the minimum minutes.
All right, Michael. You're up.
Let's go seven.
Question number seven. Everyone knows that the Nuggets traded Rudy Gobert to the Jazz, but not everyone knows what they got in return. They received two things in this trade, and you get 1 point for each correct answer.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
When you told me that it was we were going to go at 9:30 in the morning, and I said that wasn't too early, I kind of take that back a little bit.
It's 7:30 for me.
Yep.
This is a tough one. Trey Lyles. Was he involved in that? I'm gonna embarrass.
That is incorrect, Harrison.
That was another terrible draft day trade.
Yes.
Oh, the different.
Yeah,
one.
That was another. We that might be another question here.
Oh,
so
man.
I want to hold on to that one.
I mean, I know they got a second round pick. What was the other thing? I have no idea.
They actually did not get a second round pick. The two things they received in this trade were Eric Green, who actually ended up playing for the Jazz later on, which is kind of weird, and cash considerations. That's what they got in that trade for the 27th
Classic
pick.
Cash considerations.
Yes, that's right.
Should
that's
have known.
Right. Yeah. Harrison, in a riveting 0-0 game so far.
Let's go number four.
Question number four. 2013 was the last year that the Nuggets made the playoffs in the George Karl era. That 2012-13 Nuggets team played 12 different guys in the playoffs, and we're going to try to name them all. Oh, we're going to go back and forth until one of you slips up. Harrison, we're going to start with you.
Let's start with Wilson Chandler.
Wilson Chandler was on that Nuggets team. Michael.
Danilo Gallinari.
Danilo Gallinari was on this team, but he did not play in the playoffs for the Nuggets.
ACL.
ACL.
You know, there were a lot of options I could have gone with, and I don't know why I did that. It's terrible.
Harrison, you want to name? This is a pretty star-studded cast here. There's a lot of guys that stuck around the league for a long time. You want to throw out any other names?
Not really.
Okay. Iguodala, Ty Lawson, Kenneth Faried, Andre Miller, Corey Brewer.
J.R. Smith, right?
No, J.R. Smith, JaVale McGee.
Okay. I'm going to stop.
Costa Kufas, Evan Fournier, Jordan Hamilton. Okay. All right. I'm done.
All right.
I believe we are back with Michael.
Let's go number one.
Which of the following names is not listed as a nickname on Basketball Reference for these Nuggets players? Number one, KC. Number two, Big Tipper. Number three, Dr. Watt. And number four, Big Government. So that's KC, Big Tipper, Dr. Watt, and Big Government.
I'm going Big Government.
Big Government is a nickname on Basketball Reference for Reggie Jackson. Have you guys ever heard that before?
Yeah.
Never in my life.
It's because he bails you out in the playoffs. No I'm dead way. Serious. I'm That's, dead serious.
That is amazing.
He always bails you out.
Okay, Harrison, chance to steal.
So
the remaining nicknames, KC, yeah. Big Tipper, and Dr. Watt.
Dr. Watt.
Dr. Watt is correct. That is a made-up nickname that I made up last night sitting on my couch. KC is obviously Kentavious Caldwell Pope, where they just take off the P, I guess. Yeah. And Big Tipper is Jokic. So, okay. Harrison, you're up 3-0.
All right, let's go 8.
Question number 8. Everyone knows that the Nuggets traded Donovan Mitchell to the Jazz, but not everyone knows what they got in return. They received these two things, and you get 1 point per correct answer.
They got Trey Lyles, previously mentioned, and they got Tyler Lydon.
Tyler Lydon. Both are correct. Harrison, you are up 5-0 now.
Do I get half a point or just no?
Nope. You get nothing. The embarrassment of giving your opponent an answer. Yeah. That's what you get.
Unfortunately, I remember that draft night way too well. That was a really, really rough one.
So brutal. All right. Just a few questions left. Michael.
Let's go 6.
Question number 6. Jeff Green has played for 12 different NBA teams, and we're going to try to name them all. We're going to go back and forth until all the Jeff Green teams are named, or until one of you slips up. Michael, we will start with you.
Boston Celtics.
The Boston Celtics is correct.
Let's go with the Seattle Supersonics.
Seattle Supersonics, it's on the list. Michael, back to you.
Oklahoma City Thunder.
Oklahoma City Thunder. Ding, ding, ding. Harrison.
Let's go with the Washington Wizards.
Washington Wizards. Another Jeff Green team.
Brooklyn Nets.
The Brooklyn Nets is correct. Back to you, Harrison.
Let's go Cavs.
Cleveland Cavaliers is also correct. Back to you, Michael.
How many teams has he played for? Are we allowed to vamp? Is
a that lot. Okay?
12. Oh, yeah. 12 different teams.
And I'm not allowed to say the team that he's currently
No one said it. It is on the list.
Okay. Denver Nuggets.
Denver Nuggets. That's correct. Harrison.
Brooklyn Nets.
That was already named. I'm going to give you one. I'm going to give you one of those. Next time you're out.
Okay. Who else has he played for? Pelicans?
The New Orleans Pelicans is incorrect. Point goes to Michael.
That's bad, man. Ugh.
The other teams, Houston Rockets, Utah Jazz, Orlando Magic, the LA Clippers, and the Memphis Grizzlies. That's a lot of teams there. Okay. Harrison, back to you for the next question.
Go number 2.
Number 2. Which Nuggets players led the team in total blocks? There were two players that were tied.
I would have to say Aaron Gordon correct?
That's one of them. That's okay. One of them for 1 point.
And Nikola Jokic.
Nikola Jokic is incorrect. Michael, chance to steal 1 point here.
Okay. Gordon was the easy one.
Mm-hmm.
Got a couple names batting around in my head. I have no confidence in this. I am going to say DeAndre Jordan.
It is not DeAndre Jordan. It's Bruce Brown.
You know, okay.
They both tied for an absurdly low number of blocks, 51.
Yeah.
51 blocks. That's it. Okay. The current score is 6-2. Michael, this last question goes to you. You can't, in no circumstance, could you win this game.
This is not worth 5 points, the last... No, it's not.
But you could just become a hero in some way by getting this last question correct. The question is, one Nuggets player led the team in both two-point and three-point percentage this season. No minimum amount of shots. Who is this player? He's thinking hard.
Led them in 2 point.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Porter Jr.?
It is not Michael Porter Jr. Harrison, I feel like you've been doing some nodding while
while
Michael was like placing his hand on his face in like five different ways.
I think I know this one. I think it's DeAndre Jordan.
It is DeAndre Jordan.
Yeah.
He's 76% from two and 1 of 1 from three. That's why I said no minimum.
It was a beautiful 3-point make too. It was gorgeous when it happened.
And the final score, and in the first and probably last edition of Wind versus Pina, the wind goes to Wind. 7-2. Harrison, thanks so much for joining us today. Go read all of his stuff at DNVR. They also have a podcast. You can also watch it on YouTube. If you're in the Denver area, you can go check out the DNVR bar, which is pretty cool. I'd like to go there someday. Harrison, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yeah, beer's on me when you make it out.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals, and show you hidden allies so that you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/NBAshow23. That's linkedin.com/NBAshow23 for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/NBAshow23 and get started.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, it's time to bring Michael Pina into the fold to talk about the NBA playoffs. Michael, you can go, well, first of all, go read Michael at The Ringer. He's one of my favorite writers. Thanks so much for joining the show. Really appreciate it, man.
Oh my goodness, thanks so much for having me, man.
The Lakers, Warriors, and Sixers Celtics are all tied at 1-1. Who do you favor in each of these series after such convincing Game 2 wins from the Warriors and Celtics?
So I'm riding the momentum wave. My picks for both of these series were Celtics in six and Warriors in six. I feel pretty good about both of those right now.
Yeah.
We'll start with Celtics, Sixers. Just Joel Embiid's leg is such a question mark right now.
Yeah.
He said after game two, when he played abysmally, that, you know, he admitted he's supposed to be out 4 to 6 weeks with this injury and did not move around the court well at all in game two, particularly on the offensive end. The Celtics threw a lot of different matchups at him. Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Grant Williams. They doubled. They played single coverage. They took away the pick and roll, the short roll with Harden, switched that, were really effective, forced him into some difficult shots. He was a great rim protector, and they kept challenging him at the rim. I don't foresee them doing that for the rest of the series. They know he can still jump and move around in a tight space. but generally speaking, he's not even close to being what he was during the regular season, the MVP of the league, and just this dominant high usage presence. So I like the Celtics there. They are very, they're a fickle team a little bit. You know, in the first round, we saw them struggle in, I mean, they had one of the worst collapses of the postseason in game five at home against a lesser Hawks team. And obviously they let up and were just not executing or had a terrible defensive game plan in game one against James Harden and let him get off. So I still like them though. I think they're really deep, really talented. Jason Tatum had his worst, maybe the worst playoff game of his life in game two, 7 points, 1-for-7 shooting. I foresee him bouncing back in a big way for the rest of this series because, you know, when they put Tobias Harris on him, he should be able to absolutely roast that matchup. PJ Tucker is a wonderful defender, but really giving them nothing on the offensive end. And I wonder if Doc Rivers is going to have to limit PJ Tucker's minutes. If you look at the five-man unit, the Philadelphia 76ers starting five, their offensive rating is just terrible in these playoffs. And he is a little bit of why, because he does not shoot the basketball at all. I think he's taken one or two shots in this entire series.
Yeah.
So Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum should be able to have a field day, I would imagine. And that's why I picked them in the first place. Moving on to the other series, I mean, I'm just never betting against Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, and Draymond Green so long as those three guys are healthy. I know that's like
seems
the most reductive way to analyze the NBA. But with all due respect to LeBron James, who also does not look right, he had a wonderful first half in game two. Probably his best two quarters of the postseason. But I just don't, there's just something wrong with him and how he's generally been moving. So I don't have a lot of confidence there. And as we saw with Anthony Davis in game one, dominant defender, dominant on the offensive glass, creating second chance opportunities, making his jump shots. But game two, it was just like a total no show because they put Draymond Green on him. And I just feel like with the Warriors, there's always just an obvious adjustment for them. And it's either put Draymond Green, like switch the matchup with Draymond, and let him impact the game in a different way, and he will, and he'll come through. Or run more Steph Draymond pick and rolls, and you will get like 1.5 points per possession doing that, no matter what happens. And that's what happened in game two. They ran a ton of that action, and they had a ton of success. And you really neutralize the off-ball defense that the Lakers, I thought, executed really well in game one. They were top-blocking Klay. They were top-blocking Steph. And you just run ball screens with those guys. I mean, Draymond set two ball screens on Austin Reeves for Klay Thompson, and he had two huge pull-up threes. You rarely see that in game two. And so they could just go to that basically anytime they want because Anthony Davis does not want to come out of the paint. That's really – it kind of takes away his strength and kind of the defensive identity of the Los Angeles Lakers and what's gotten into this point. So I just think that – like they're a cheat code. The Warriors are a cheat code. They always have the right answer. I don't understand why they don't run Steph Draymond pick and rolls from the jump and get themselves in a hole. But when they do go to that and lean on it and they have spacing around it, it's just impossible to stop. And we've seen it for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the Sixers, what do you think they do if they don't advance? Like, where do they go from here?
I mean, it's a fascinating question. The number one talking point is obviously James Harden, what he does with his contract. He followed Jabari Smith Jr. on Twitter yesterday.
I saw that. this is like the level that we hit when we talk about the NBA being a soap opera.
100%.
Like when it's who follows who on Twitter or who unfollowed who. Did you see that they unfollowed their team on Instagram? You know, like that's where it hits. Like this is just soap opera for dudes.
Yes, exactly. So I love that. Look, I don't know if he leaves. I don't know what you do. I think that he's obviously not the player necessarily that he was when he was winning MVPs and averaging 30 points a game. But he's still capable of that, and I think he led the league in assists this season. He's a tremendous playmaker, always has been, ever since he entered the league. And I don't – like, if he leaves, you can't just – you can't replace that production. Tyrese Maxey's a wonderful player. He's just not – that's just not his role in the NBA right now or maybe ever. So do you – I mean, if he were to leave, I think the – the ripple effect then is, what is Joel Embiid doing? Is he upset? Is he asking for a trade? And things could tumble very quickly, I think. So tough scenario if they lose this series, which I anticipate they will.
Mm-hmm. So three teams find themselves in these final eight of the playoffs that ended the regular season outside the top 10 in net rating, which didn't happen last year, including the Warriors at 11th. Lakers at 16th, and the Heat, who finished 21st in net rating. Here are the eighth seeds that beat a one seed since 99 in their net ratings. The 99 Knicks were 14th in net. The 07 Warriors were 13th in net. The 11 Grizzlies were 10th in net rating. And the 2012 Sixers were 5th in net rating. So like there were like signs that like, oh, okay, there is a good team in here throughout the regular season. And then you have the Heat, who were... that might have been the team that I liked watching the least during the regular season. Mm-hmm. And somehow they have become this like playoff nightmare for teams. Like, did you see this coming at all? Were there any like signs of this that you could see? And like, what do we make of this run from the Heat so far?
To me, it comes down to two things. Giannis Antetokounmpo's injury.
Yep.
Jimmy Butler, period. Just going to another universe in the first round, playing one of the best just five game stretches you'll see from an individual. He was just phenomenal. And then the reason why I picked the Knicks in this series is in round one, we saw what I thought was unsustainable 3-point shooting. So in the regular season, the Heat ranked 27th. In three-point accuracy. They made 34.8% of their threes. In the playoffs, they are number one. They're at 41%. Like, it's just, I just find it to be completely, like, either they were bad in an unsustainable way for the regular season, and now all of a sudden everyone's trying, or all of this is going to come back to earth at some point, and, you know, I think Kevin Love hit like five threes. He's a good 3-point shooter, don't get me wrong.
Right.
They're not even just like wide open. They're like, some of them are tough looks. Like Caleb Martin has hit some really difficult threes where he just lets it go. And now you're anticipating every time he shoots it to go in. Gabe Vincent with the pull ups is just like, are you going to make an all-star team next year? What is even going on? So some of these shots, I just don't anticipate them falling as the series goes on and the playoffs go on if they should advance. Like I know that last year they were a great 3-point shooting team and a lot of those same players are on this roster. So maybe the whole year was a fluke. I don't know. It's just very odd. It's very bizarre. And it's like very smoke and mirrorsy to me, which is disrespectful to the best coach in the NBA, in my opinion, who's been phenomenal and really earns his paycheck every single night with his strategies and his schemes. And they almost won. I was at game two at Madison Square Garden, which they almost won somehow without Jimmy Butler because they played zone for the last 36 minutes or whatever it was. And it wasn't always the most successful outcomes with that, but they really pushed New York to the limit offensively, forced them to hit shots, and Josh Hart hit a couple big corner threes. If those don't fall, who knows what we're talking about right now. But yeah, I just think that like the shooting at the end of the day is like the big thing. And now that Jimmy is, we don't really know what the deal is with his ankle. It makes me lean even more towards the Knicks prevailing in this series.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's just funny that the things that the Heat are doing are kind of like what the seven game series are supposed to be for. You know, it's like, okay, like we want to kind of protect against like just like one hot shooting game.
Right.
But like they've just had this insane like 3 week run. We're just like what is it? Like they lost a play-in game. Like they like what's going on here?
It's they just, almost lost the second one. They were like down.
I know.
Three
I don't know
what.
I just don't know
Bulls.
What to do with them. Yeah, it's been strange. I mean, it's been watching Jimmy has been honestly a joy. Mm-hmm. You know, but the rest of it's just like I don't know how this is happening. I mean, that's how I felt the entire game too, and they did end up losing. But I mean, I was talking to one of my buddies during like, are they really going to do this? Is this really going to happen? And I think the Knicks will end up winning the series too, but it's just so weird. Just such a weird, weird run for the Heat. I want to talk about the Phoenix Suns. They've really struggled to find a rotation. Monty Williams is like shuffling through all mm-hmm. kinds of lineups, and he hasn't really found anything yet. If you were Monty, what would you do to give this team a jolt in Game 3?
I would... At some point, and maybe it's too late, I don't know, but at some point, like, you need to reduce the minutes of KD and Devin Booker. I think they're 1 and 2 right now in minutes per game. They're at like 42, 43 or something like that.
I think that's right. Yeah.
And it's like, I picked the Nuggets in the series because I thought that Phoenix was extremely top heavy. So like, I understand what Monty's doing. He doesn't trust his bench. But, like, is TJ Warren really unplayable? Like, is, you know what I mean? Like, just play him, see what happens yeah. for 6 minutes. Mm-hmm. Terrence Ross was defensively has just been so terrible in this postseason.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
like,
you can't
just
do that.
You can't do it. But, like, I'm not saying that this is like a solution because it's not, especially against this Nuggets team where it's like when Jokic is on the court, obviously you're done. But even when Jokic is off the court, they've been playing these like staggered bench units that are tearing opponents to shreds. They mm-hmm. tore the Minnesota to shreds. They're tearing Phoenix to shreds. So like, yep. I don't really know what the answer is. I think obviously, you know, if Chris Paul is not playing. So what I would do is like, I would ask Kevin Durant to I would ask him to watch film of the 2021 second round series against the Milwaukee Bucks when Kyrie Irving and James Harden weren't available. And I'd say, hey,
yep,
this is what you are going to be for us now. You are bringing the ball up the court.
Yep.
Like you're going to make them put two on you 30 feet from the basket if they want to do that. And if not, you're going one on one and you're shooting. Like,
mm-hmm.
It sounds really stupid and not stupid, but like simple, a little too simple. But that's why they got him. He's worth the picks. He's worth Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, all your depth. So you got to ride him. And yeah, I guess it kind of is opposite of what my first strategy was, which was to reduce his minutes.
Well, I think you have to go simple, though. Like you don't really have any other option
right.
with this roster and with the time that they've had together. It's like, okay, like now we just play Kevin Durant basketball.
Yes.
And I think that's like your only good option.
Yeah. So it's going to be really difficult. I mean, I would not like be shocked if he dropped 47 tonight or whatever it was and they win going away. Mm-hmm. But I still like Denver in this series. I think Denver has more cards to play. I think Denver has the best player in the series. Yep. And the fact that they won game two the way that they did should give that whole organization like a ton of confidence. Jamal Murray could not buy a basket and they won with their defense and they've been really sound defensively rotating. When Jokic goes up to touch with KD and Book, everything behind him has been just like almost perfect. So they got to feel great. And Phoenix is in a lot of trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. I agree. Okay. Kind of a off the wall question, but I find myself thinking about these other teams during the playoffs and like, what are these teams going to do? What are they going to look like coming into next season? And I wanted to ask you, which team would you rather be for the next 3 seasons? The Blazers, the Timberwolves, or the Hawks? Pick one team.
This is a great question.
I'm asking it because I don't know what the answer is myself when I think about it.
I think the simplest way to look at it for me is who, like, what player am I most excited about being involved with or in the business of?
Right now,
it's the answer to me is like very obvious. It's Anthony Edwards.
Sure.
And I understand the limitations there that you have with obviously the draft capital out the door, Rudy Gobert in the door. But what you can do is get a little creative, see what you can get, obviously, with eventually with Karl Anthony Towns. I would not necessarily scramble to trade him this summer. But eventually, I think I would be kind of shocked if Karl Anthony Towns spent the rest of his career with the Minnesota Timberwolves. That just doesn't seem likely. But yep. Ant is someone who I'm just like super, I'd be super pumped about because he just has like top 10 MVP candidate like vibes about him, the skill set. Yep. That I honestly was most blown away by his like on-ball defense from like the last few weeks of the season into the first round, into the like in the play-in. He just brings it on that end. Like what he did to, I think it was the last game of the regular season, I want to say, a game they won despite Rudy punching Kyle Anderson, when he like locked down Brandon Ingram with,
yes,
it was like an incredible display because Brandon Ingram was like playing like one of the best players in the world at that point. So I love everything about Ant's game. So I'd probably pick them. I'm like, you know, the Blazers could get Victor Wembanyama in the lottery.
Yeah.
And then
that might change a few things.
That would entirely change this conversation big time. You trade Dame, you get a ton back for him, and you just start over, and that's fun, whatever. Or maybe you don't trade Dame. I don't know. And then you just like win the championship this season because Victor Wembanyama is like a top 10 player right away. I don't know. The Hawks are just kind of like a total mess. I'm the last person who's like a Trae Young believer, I think, who covers the NBA, but even I, starting to have my doubts there with how you can win at the highest levels consistently with him on your roster playing big minutes. And I think he's truly special offensively, but like, the fact that they also don't have the draft capital right now going forward because of the DeJounte Murray trade, which you can't undo. I thought DeAndre Hunter was going to be a lot better and more advanced offensively than he is. And it just hasn't happened. So I like their young core. I like Jalen Johnson. I like Okongwu a lot. I think he could be their starting center next season. Who knows? We'll see. Yep. But fundamentally, I just like riding with Ant, I think, for a question like this.
Yeah. Okay, last question. Who's your current pick to win the NBA Finals?
I think it's the Celtics.
Okay.
Yeah. I just think that they have the most talent. I think every team has like a flaw that is just kind of really worrisome right now, including Boston, but I think that theirs is the most correctable.
Is the flaw that they just like take their foot off the gas and like don't have that like killer mentality all the time? Like what would you say their major flaw is?
It's a little bit of that. I think that I'm a big Joe Mazzulla fan. I thought he did a tremendous job during the regular season, and then he just made some truly head-scratching decisions in the first round against the Hawks. Game one, I was kind of flummoxed by his rotation. I was flummoxed by their pick-and-roll coverage on Harden throughout the whole game. And in game two, I was like, I think that Celtics fans were able to exhale a little bit with how he finally reinserted Grant Williams in the rotation. Grant Williams is just like straight up one of their eight best players. No question about it. So for him to not play at all in the first round was very strange.
So weird. Yeah.
So weird. And he played 28 minutes, 4-for-8 from behind the three-point line, had some huge energy hustle plays, brings it on defense. Just a really good player. So,
yep.
You play him, you settle down a little bit. I think that that honestly is like there, you correct that and they're on the right track. But yeah, like the killer instinct thing and all that, I don't know. It's tough because they lose in the finals, and the reason that they lost in the finals was sludgy offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And their offense is first right now in the playoffs. I think they were top three somewhere in there, and for the regular season, that was the clear thing that Joe Mazzulla and the staff were worried about coming off that finals loss. And I feel like they have so many different answers offensively now, especially with Malcolm Brogdon on board, that I'm not that worried about just their lulls, if that makes any sense. And sure. I think that defensively they have the personnel to stop anyone. And they just have so many different options you can throw. So it's got to be Boston for me right now. Not the most confident about that, but also, like, I would say the Nuggets, but the Nuggets are probably going to go, like, have to go against the, you know, I think it's going to be Steph and Draymond.
That's the thing is, like, who is the conference finalist to, like, finish alongside those? And, like, I think you feel really good about the Celtics against whoever advances on the other side of the bracket. But then it's like, oh, yeah, there's Steph. Like, the Nuggets, I think you could make the argument, and I was talking with Harrison about this before, like, you could make the argument they've been the best team in the playoffs.
Easily.
Like, they've looked really, really good. And still, like, there's still, like, this little bit of, like, twinge in the back of my head. I'm like, do I really think they can do it? Do I really think that they can beat Steph and Draymond and Clay? Like, I think they can. I do think they can. But I'm going to need to see it before I pick them. It's kind of still how I feel, which is, I'm sure it's infuriating to Nuggets fans that, like, people still feel this way, because it's like they're answering the call. Like, they played better than everybody, but I still need to see it.
It's tough. I love what Malone has done to the rotation. Love Aaron Gordon as the backup five. Love how their defense looks. We just talked about all that. And I think Jokic, like, I think so highly of Jokic. It's like,
yeah,
like, I love Steph. I just think Jokic is the best. Like, I think he's the best.
Yep.
So I just also think back to last year and their first round matchup and how, like, Jokic was dominant in that series, but obviously if you just look at what was around him, it was tough. And they brought in the exact pieces that you would want to bring in after losing a playoff series like that. You trade for KCP. He's perfect for the Golden State Warriors. You bring in Bruce Brown, perfect for that matchup. So I just, you know, I said earlier I would not pick against Steph, Clay, Draymond, like, ever. I might change my mind if, like, the Denver Nuggets sweep the Suns. And
I don't know.
It's really interesting. It's really unpredictable. These playoffs are a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I've loved the, like, unpredictable nature of it. And that's why I'm super into it. My 11-year-old too is, like, getting super into it. He, like, asks me every morning, like, hey, like, what happened last night? What's going on? Which is just, like, that's, like, the best thing in my life right now. Okay, Michael, thanks so much for coming on the show. Go read Michael at The Ringer. You had a piece about the Denver Nuggets. This is a podcast largely about the Denver Nuggets, so go read that today. Go follow Michael on Twitter at Michael V. Pina. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Andrew, thanks so much, my man.
Thanks again to Harrison Wind and Michael Pina for joining the show. If you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we will read it on the show. Do that, and we'll read it next week. Hope you guys enjoy your weekend and the playoffs, and we will talk to you guys again next week.